you call the president an Indonesian Muslim turned welfare thug and a racist in chief? I mean, yeah. Is that the kind of...
That's the way he's behaving.
But in Obama's America, the white kids now get beat up with the black kids cheering, yay, right on, right on, right on, right on.
If you are a religious person, you don't want someone telling your child that it's okay to be gay. It's as simple right. as that.
I'm gay and I don't molest any children. What do you think?
Well, I say you're lying.
Do right. you pray that I'll you pray that I'll die tonight?
If you're a homosexual, I hope you get brain cancer.
You know, it took me about a year to start hating the 9/11 victims' families. It took me about a year.
I like turtles.
And welcome again to the Amrin's Podcast Live Edition. This is episode 185. I always forget to say what edition it is. But there you have it. And on today's episode, I'm joined by my faithful panel, Stephen in Wisconsin and Larry Dean. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Kitty Carlisle here.
You do realize that dates you a bit. And also joining us tonight is Larkin. Hello, Larkin.
Hello.
Well, the main topic tonight, in addition to dogs... is the events of this week. Earlier this week, of course, the voters in the state of Maine rejected same-sex marriage. They re-illegalized it, you could say. And that's essentially where we're starting out, because that marks 31 defeats in a row. And apparently we've pulled out a narrow win in Washington State on everything but marriage civil unions. But nevertheless, radical religious extremists have been emboldened by the victory in Maine, and they're marching on in their campaign to deny GLBT people all civil and human rights, not just the right to marry. So how do we fight back and win? You know, we obviously have to have a grassroots campaign, like in Maine, for instance. But how do we take on the scaremongering? How do we fight the lies? And how do we defeat the radical religious extremists without coming across like we think that all religion or all religious people are our enemies? And how do we put an end to the nonsense of people being able to vote on who is and who is not an equal citizen? How do we, what do we need to do right now to get things moving to turn the tide? So those are the sorts of things we're going to have a look at tonight. And I think I'd kind of like to begin with the larger thing about where we're at. Because I've been reading some things where, like, David Mixner, for instance, said that he's sick of gay apartheid, which I think is probably almost as unfortunate as using the word Holocaust. The meaning is too specific, but that's another issue. And also, the guy who created the rainbow flag was quoted as saying about a protest in New York, where are the pitchforks? In other words, why aren't gay people angrier? So let's start with that. Should we be any more angry after this particular defeat than we were after any other defeat?
I suppose that would depend upon what you as a gay person want.
Okay.
You know, I mean, if marriage isn't important.
I think anger leads to... Oh, just I was just going to say, I think anger leads to setbacks, too. So, yeah. Acting out tends to... rioting, you know, that sort of thing just tends to set us back.
Okay. Fair enough. Stephen?
Perhaps what we need to do is just make them realize that we are no different than they are. It work towards normalizing, quotation marks, homosexuality. We are no different. We are humans just as they are. We deserve our rights as well, or the same rights, I should say.
Well, that's exactly what Harvey Milk did during the Briggs Initiative in California. He had people going door to door, basically showing them the face of what they were preparing to vote for or against or whatever. And mm-hmm. It worked in California. It did not work in Maine. Maine had tens of thousands, well, maybe not tens of thousands anyway, of volunteers going across the state door to door, making phone calls, reaching out personally to voters. Not all of them, obviously, were... GLBT people. Some of them were just, you know, parents or friends or just concerned citizens or what have you. But the point is that they had a human face on their campaign and they still lost. So is it possible then to overcome our opponents simply by saying, by presenting our side when nobody seems to be paying any attention to us?
They are paying attention. They're just not paying the right attention.
Well, true.
The attention we want, I should say. Who's to say what's right or wrong?
They narrowly beat, right?
It was roughly 15. The same margin as Proposition 8.
53 to 47, I think.
Yeah.
Again, even 10 years ago, do you think it would have been this close?
Well, that's a good point, really, because it wasn't so very long ago that we couldn't even get human rights ordinances in cities passed, let alone a statewide measure allowing same-sex marriage.
And this kind of goes off of last week in a lot of the conversation, yeah. Do we need one big agenda, or is it okay for us to do a bunch of small baby steps? And, you know, ultimately, they're not going to win.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, do any of us question that in the long run?
No.
Will these fanatics win?
Well, the tide of history is on our side, clearly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, I personally, I mean, it's very sad that they have to do what they do and they have to use fear. I mean, they just do what the Republicans do so well, is use fear to, you know, push their side. And in the long run, it will end. And it will probably end at a national level, you know, that there will be national laws that are passed that will, you know, make
right.
it better for all of us.
Well, I saw a comment somewhere where somebody was essentially saying that we need our own Loving v. Virginia. And while that's probably true ultimately for the nation, we're decades away from that.
Right.
There aren't enough states, first of all, that recognize same-sex marriage. And there's not even a chance to bring that before the court, let alone get that sort of ruling, which actually is something we sort of actually talked about this a bit last week, because we were saying that last week about how the African-American, the modern African-American civil rights struggle is roughly 20 years older than the modern gay and lesbian civil rights struggle, and yet they're nowhere near achieving full equality. So is it maybe even unrealistic to expect that we'd be any further along than we are, even though this is the 21st century?
Well, and I actually was discussing that with a friend at work this week, that quite honestly, considering that the Black civil rights movement literally took 100 years to even seriously break the ice, we're still in, what, maybe 30, 32 years of our civil rights struggle?
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the things I think that is significant is that we not lose ground, even if we're not, even if the move forward is in fits and starts. And I think we've seen some evidence that the tide has turned in that sense, because, for instance, in Kalamazoo, Michigan, the radical right was using the exact same lies and smears and scare tactics that they use on marriage, and yet it didn't work in Kalamazoo. The voters of Kalamazoo approved a human rights law for their town. So that sort of thing doesn't seem to be affected by the overall struggle against marriage equality. And one of the things that's bothered me about the whole marriage equality debate, and I'm sure that we've talked about this on some group show or other somewhere, is that it is being treated as if it is the end-all and be-all of everything to do with gay and lesbian civil rights. And I only see it as something that we are taking on because to be denied the right to marry is to be treated as a second-class citizen. But it's only part of the puzzle, and it's not even necessarily the most important part, because things like ENDA, as we were saying last mm-hmm. week, will right. affect far more people than marriage equality right now would.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if that's true, then maybe what we're doing is we're getting too upset about the wrong things.
Or spreading our focus a little too far.
Hmm.
Well, yes and no. I think the more states that legalize gay marriage, the faster everything will move along for everything else.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So it's just a small part of the big puzzle, and it's like people are going to have their interests in what they want to focus on, and why don't we let them work on what they want to work on?
Hmm.
Does that make, you know,
on a personal basis. Do we need a united
fight? Yeah, I mean, do we need a united fight? I mean, this kind of goes back to last week. Do we need a united fight as a gay group? As a queer or whatever, I mean, whatever we are. I don't want to leave anybody out.
I think a person's focus changes over time, too. I know that, the equivalent of state and exists probably pretty broadly. Not entirely, but...
No, I know. Virginia is one of the few... I don't know how many states aren't. I personally have lived in a state that I couldn't lose my job or lose my housing because I was gay since Minnesota passed in, like, 91 or so.
Right.
So, I mean... It's not, almost my entire life that I've been out as a gay man, it's never been a worry of mine.
Well, I lived my entire life in the U.S. in a state where it was legal to fire somebody or to refuse to employ them or to evict them or what have you, simply for their sexuality. And for most of the time I lived in Chicago, it was also legal. And the fact that it didn't happen has more to do with the fact it's an urban environment and just stupid to do that, a bit more sophisticated than maybe some other areas of the state. But nevertheless, it's something that on some level, because I was an activist, on some level I was aware of that there was always that possibility. And I actually had a partner for a while who was fired for being gay. He's worked for a firm that was in what we call the collar counties, one of the Republican counties that are outside of Chicago that surround it. And right. They didn't like gay people, so they fired him. And there was absolutely nothing he could do about it. That was it.
And that's not the case. Is Illinois now...
Illinois now has a human rights law, and that theoretically can't happen. But we shouldn't place too much emphasis on laws because the burden of proof is still on the person who's fired or refused housing or refused credit or what have you. And
right.
It's not that easy to prove discrimination. In his case, it was because they said so. But yeah. but it's usually not a clear cut.
Just the fact that the law is there, people... are more, especially if job-wise, housing-wise, it's a little bit harder, you know, to discriminate against somebody that way. Hmm. But job-wise, it would be easier.
Well, most of those laws tend to set the tone. They set the ground rules for what everybody's allowed to do. And most, say, rental houses, for rental apartments, for example, like a complex, they know what the laws are and they go out of their way to comply with them. They're not really interested in discriminating against people. The problem gets down to the small-time property owner or the small right. business. And most of those are exempted from the laws anyway. The human rights laws very often apply only to businesses with X number of employees so that small businesses are exempt. I know that the human rights ordinance in Chicago doesn't apply to housing units of 4 units or less. I think it is 3 or 4. I've forgotten now. It's been a long time. So, I mean, this kind of thing is common. It's just like in the marriage laws, they're exempting religious organizations from having to perform same-sex marriages. It seems like our rights always have to have an asterisk on them, whereas nobody else's does, but that's a whole other issue.
Right.
I guess what I'm getting at, basically, is that we shouldn't rely specifically on laws to bring about social and legal equality, which gets sort of back a bit to what Stephen was saying earlier, I think, about how we've got to make people see us as who we are. And
or even just see us.
Well,
I
yeah.
think to Tara's point, too.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I find it hard to believe in this day and age that everybody doesn't know at least one gay person. But it's how well do they know that person.
Or they may not know that they know a gay person, too.
Oh, everybody knows gay people, but I have a hard time believing that everybody doesn't know at least one out gay person.
Well, it's getting harder, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, celebrity or otherwise, but even then, I mean...
Unless, of course, you're backwoods Maine, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, because the religious bigots in Maine were able to successfully portray us. They were able to portray us as people who would recruit children, as, who the heck was it? I forgot now who it was sarcastically talking about it, the way they portrayed us as having anal sex classes for third graders. And we all know that that's bullshit. Even sane, sensible people know that it's bullshit, but it resonates with a huge segment of the voting population. So if they are so successful in defining us in completely negative terms, how do we get past that in order to make the mainstream voters who we have to win over see us as real people, first of all, multidimensional people? Is it just a matter of getting past the ick factor?
Cricket, maybe.
I worry about fighting back.
We'll do Larkin first.
Yes.
Okay, my question is, what is it about gay people that straight people have a problem with? And I don't know if it's one unique thing, you know.
Well,
and to figure out, you know, is it who we have sex with, or is it more religious, you know, their religious convictions on what they believe? I mean, what is it that the straight community that has a problem with us? I mean, I think you need to define that first, because everybody, you know, potentially is unique out there in what their thoughts are.
Hmm.
Or maybe not unique, but, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons.
Yeah,
I don't know what they would be, but...
Like lack of knowledge, as Tara says in the chat room.
Oh, totally.
And Larry, what were you going to say?
Try to resist to stooping to the methods that have been used against us, you know, and that's the one thing that I don't want to do, is I don't want to, land in a situation where we're trying to fight back using the exact same methods. I think the important thing for us is to try and, here's just something that's crossed my mind a couple of times this week, is that certainly in Maine, and I also think so in California, that by seizing and writing the propositions the way that they do, you have to force somebody to vote negatively on something.
Hmm.
So it's almost like first to the plate gets to own the language. And that's a part of what I think happened in Maine. And I also think the same on Proposition 8 in California. So I don't know whether we're a little slow on the uptake on some of these, and I don't know. I mean, California, I don't know that there's a way we could have been first to the plate, but in Maine, perhaps citizens' vote positive might have been an easier battle than trying to convince people to vote no on taking something away.
Although, on the other hand, in the state of Washington, they were voting in the positive in order to be able to keep the everything but marriage civil unions. They had to approve it, and it still apparently only barely squeaked by.
But those little 3 or 4 percentage points can make a huge difference.
And at the end of the day, all that matters is you win. It doesn't matter if it's by one vote.
And that, you know, that sort of aggravates me, that we're having to resort to voting on whether we have rights or not.
Yeah.
That is hugely aggravating.
Well, I think in the case of a civil rights thing, a bill, a law, what have you, these days more and more people are beginning to understand that that's not something that you put up to vote. And I think Kalamazoo is one of the indicators of that. That people realize it's just offensive on its face for the population as a whole to sit in judgment over who is equal and who's not. But the problem we have on that score is that there's a huge segment of the population, not necessarily anti-gay, who doesn't see marriage as a civil right. And so from their perspective, it's not about deciding who has a right and who doesn't have a right. The issue has successfully been framed as redefining marriage. And until we get past that, it's going to be very difficult to get people to see it as a rights issue.
Well, and even just pinning the word civil on the front of marriage, I think, would be an easier pill to swallow.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, we don't seem to use that term, civil marriage. You know, and in Connecticut, where first civil unions were approved, and then the Supreme Court finally struck down the term civil union and said it had to be marriage. But Connecticut's about as blue a state as you can imagine. So there were, when I lived in California, I would have said the opposite, that California was the bluest of the states. But these days it seems like Massachusetts and Connecticut get that moniker. So I don't know. I mean, there's a piece of me agrees with the people who say we need to go for the real thing. We have to have what's called marriage. But the successes have been better, or more frequent anyway, on going for civil union first rather than marriage.
Hmm.
I am completely in favor of the civil union domestic partnership thing, as long as it is exactly what Washington has, where it is everything but the name marriage, because it's the equivalent of handing somebody a soda without the label on it and saying, here you go. You're still getting the soda, it just doesn't have the label on it.
See, which I think is how New Jersey did it, right?
See, well, my problem with that, though, is if you have two different names, all the laws currently in the books have it one way.
Right.
And you'd have to basically repass all those laws with it both ways for it to really be equal.
Which is what they did in Connecticut. Literally, they went through and rewrote the laws to add both terms. But then the Supreme Court turned around and said, you know, you've just wasted your time.
Yeah.
Which was rare. You know, I think even people in Connecticut were not really expecting the Supreme Court to rule in the favor of marriage across the board.
I have a question. As far, this is something that bothers me, because when I lived in Minnesota, we didn't have referendums. That was not how the state did business. You elected your people, and then they passed the laws. Where would we be at if, I mean, I know within California, all the referendums that have been passed, and it's such a bad way to make laws and pass laws, because laws so often are unconstitutional, but the state, if the voters vote something in, the state has to do that until it's found unconstitutional or something else. Mm-hmm. And it wastes, besides the whole referendum process and getting it on and the money that's spent that way, I'd rather just, where would we be within, you know, the gay community if we didn't have the referendums as a way for people to, you know, speak this way?
Well, of this trouble is coming from ballot initiatives by and large, although some of the backward states have pushed through laws and so on. But a lot of this is coming from citizen-initiated referenda or something.
Yeah.
Right. That's definitely always going to be the case for the minority. The minority tends not to win citizen vote.
Yeah, and it, one of the things, Nigel and I were talking about this the other day, the civil union bill, when it was moving through Parliament here, was touch and go the whole way through, and it barely passed. If there had been a referendum held about it at that time, it would have lost. It would have been repealed, except that that never happens under our system. I just don't take any old law and give it to the people. And if the people do an initiative, it's not binding, so it doesn't matter. But now, you know, so many years on, nobody would think about repealing it. It's just, you know, part of the scenery. And I think that's part of the problem. What happens is that these laws get passed by a legislature, as happened twice in California, although it was vetoed twice, as happened in Maine and was signed, or it's imposed by a judge, as happens ultimately in California and in Iowa and other places. And then the people immediately react to it, the people meaning the fringe, immediately react to it, and they get these initiatives on the ballot, and it's still a hot emotional issue, and people vote immediately, and they vote to repeal it. If there was some way to impose time between
like
the time...
Like a cool down.
Exactly. I mean, we get, what, 5 or 7 days, depending on where you are, after you sign a contract before it's binding. Why shouldn't there be some sort of mandatory cool down period between when a law is passed and when the people can try to repeal it? The way that things are in Iowa, it looks like it could easily be several years before the haters will have an opportunity to try to repeal it. And it seems to me that that could be a model for other states. Now, we don't know that yet because we don't know that Iowa won't ultimately repeal same-sex marriage. But it could be one way of getting around this problem of hot-headed extremists going out there exploiting the emotion of the moment to get what they want and taking away the rights of minority groups. Just a thought.
Well, if everything were up to referenda, we'd still be burning witches. I mean, literally.
So, because ideally for me, my preference would be for us to get, I mean, otherwise, it's just a terrible way to pass laws or to do business, period. I mean, why don't we pass all laws that way if that's the way we want to do things then?
Right. Why bother having a legislature?
I mean, because, and this is something that always bothers me anyways, it's off topic a little bit, but it kind of fits here. Right now, John McCain is pushing the Internet Freedom Act.
Yeah, which is anything which but. Which
was written by the big telecom companies, which would not regulate the telephone companies in any way, shape, or form. Or, you know, there'd be no regulation. So the telephone companies and cable companies could control what kind of traffic goes over their network and get rid of the stuff that they don't want that competes with their business. Right now in Congress, we don't have people that are smart enough to figure out that, let alone the average person on the street to be able to understand. We should be able to hold our elected officials to a higher standard, saying, you need to understand this stuff if you're going to vote on it.
Oh, they never do.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we're asking them to pass, we're asking these people that we elect to at least take the time to understand and research before they vote on a bill, and to have, you know, some kind of understanding of it versus the, you know, the general population, which will never have that. They're voting because their sports team told them to vote a certain way, quoting Mr. Brewer from last week.
You know, paraphrasing anyway.
Yeah. We all know what happens when you paraphrase Mr. Brewer.
He'll be on in a second and correct us. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. I'm probably taking this a lot larger context than we need to right now. But,
well, it's true. And the thing is that a lot of these people who end up being elected to state legislatures aren't necessarily very bright. And it's a fact of life that politics tends to attract some strange people and some people who have no business being there. Getting them to be smarter is a big ask. I don't know that we can do this, particularly because despite what everybody thinks, they don't get paid that well. Congress people do, but state legislators generally don't get paid all that well. And
it's state variable. Some states do very well, some states don't.
Yeah. But go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say one of the disappointing things lately, though, is how our own representatives on the, we'll say on the blue side, are not helping with any of our items either.
Yeah.
I guess I was going to say the agenda, but
we dismissed that.
We're not sure that there is one. So, for example, like the Democratic National Committee sending out information in Maine, and they mention nothing about referendum on gay marriage. It's just gives one the feeling of the second-class citizen.
Yeah. And I've said this before on Too Political, that one of the problems with the people who are so quick to blame President Obama for everything are letting the Democratic majorities in both houses off the hook, because it's essentially saying that President Obama is single-handedly responsible for the fact that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is still there, DOMA is still there, that ENDA is not enacted. But he doesn't control Congress. He doesn't control the legislative agenda. Where is Harry Reid? Where is Nancy Pelosi? Why aren't these people there pushing these issues? Because they don't care about them. And I don't mean to say that they wouldn't vote correctly and all that. I'm saying it's not one of their priorities. They don't even see it in their periphery. Until we can make the Democratic majority, because obviously the Republicans will never support these issues, apart from the one or two moderates who are still left in the party. So we've got to find some way of forcing the Democratic leadership and majorities in both houses to actually act on these things, and we don't know what to do that yet.
Right.
pardon me. I was just distracted by the chat room for a minute there. Where was I?
You were just about to ask Stephen a question.
Sure, lift the curtain and show what's going on behind the scenes, why don't you?
I'm playing the part of conscience tonight. Jesus.
No, are you pissed off that you've been in the vehicle all week?
I think someday we're going to find out that conscience has been having a good time all on his own.
Well, anyway.
A lone time to discover himself?
That's right.
At least they could leave him some Grey Goose if they're going to do that.
Yeah. Well, conscience goes to meetings now, though. Poor Maybe conscience. It's time to go off the wagon.
Well, he hasn't really talked about the meetings at all recently, so maybe he's not.
Ooh, it could
be. He's fallen back off the wagon.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we all know, the referendum on in Maine or in the state of Washington wasn't the only thing going on in the elections on Tuesday, and one of those, of course, is the way that the conservatives are trying to spin the elections. Stephen, why don't we start with your thoughts on that?
This morning, there were a couple opinion pieces in the paper about how this is this shows how the public feels about Obama, basically about the two governor elections, the one in Virginia and the one in New Jersey. And the thing is, at least with the Virginia one, that doesn't reflect on him at all, for the most part, or really at all, because we knew before the election that the Democratic candidate wasn't going to win.
Yeah.
He was a dead fish. He was not going to win. Even the Democrats didn't really like him. So
with good reason.
Obviously, he wasn't. That has no reflection on the president, because they're not voting for him because they don't like him, not because they don't like the president. I'm trying to figure out how they can try and spin two elections, because it was just the two, and we basically knew in both of them that neither of the Democrats were going to win.
Yeah,
it's just silly of them.
Well, funnily enough, this is a major topic on the next Two Political podcast, which will be posted as soon as I can find time to edit it. So there will be more on this, and Jason actually has a very interesting perspective on the Virginia race in particular. But one of the things that I find fascinating about that is that the conservatives are trying to say that for some reason that the Republicans getting the governorship and so on of New Jersey and in Virginia is a referendum on Obama, but a Democrat winning in New York's 23rd district is not a referendum on the right-wing Republicans. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah, and that election, it makes me kind of happy in a certain way as well, because it split the conservatives in two, which made it easier for the Democrat to win. But on top of that, they're already talking about trying to get Barbara Boxer, is it?
Yeah.
In California, out of her position by doing exactly the same thing, splitting their party in two and running two people.
Right.
No, the conservatives having the Republican Party and the Tea Party, as I've been calling them.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping this is a trend, because if that happens, it's going to make it a lot easier for Democrats to win.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, if you look at what they did in New York's 23rd, they were contemptuous of the local people. The Conservative Party candidate they brought in was from outside of the district. He didn't have a clue about what was going on in that area, and he didn't care, because he wasn't running to represent that district. He was running to be a Tea Party member of Congress, whereas both the Republican and the Democrat were running to be the U.S. representative for that district. And that's ultimately, I think, why the Democrat won, because he was, you know, concentrating on the district. But in California, I've forgotten the woman who is announced to take on Senator Boxer. It's a McCain supporter, whoever she is.
Yeah.
And the Republicans, the Tea Party faction, have already said that they are planning on challenging her, and which is what Stephen was just talking about. And you think to yourself, now, what kind of sense does that make as a strategy? I mean, they're going to purge the party of anybody who's even remotely moderate and leave only the hard right people in there. And we know that even right now, there's only, 19% of Americans who will self-identify as Republican now. How on earth can they win an election if they do that? Now, I hope they do. Because we'll be rid of the pesky lot once and for all. But are they just insane?
Some of them, yes.
It's kind of interesting to think that the common phrase is that Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line.
Yeah.
But yet they're splitting again apart from each other and not really falling in line very well right now.
Well, which is what the Democrats had problems with for a good number of years too. We couldn't get it together.
Yeah.
I don't understand the logic of this, that they have a Democrat. Okay, let me get this right. They have a Democrat and Republican running in a district, and then they bring in a third candidate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because the Republican in there is not conservative enough for them.
But how could that ever work?
Well, they brought in all the heavy hitters, Sarah Palin and Fred Thompson and Dick Armey and all these other people.
But it didn't work, right?
No, it failed.
And I don't picture, because the Democrats aren't going to be, they're not going after the Democrats, because Democrats aren't going to, that's not going to work on them. So it's just going to splinter their party.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, how could it do anything but that?
You'll
have a few dumb Democrats that would go over, but
it just
the best I can come up with is that perhaps they think that every Republican feels the same way the Tea Party does.
Yes.
And that's not true. I know many Republicans who don't feel that way at all.
Yes.
In fact, a lot of them voted for Obama last time.
Oops.
Actually, I know several Republicans who voted for Obama as well.
Well, which just goes to the play to the middle to win.
Yeah. Well, that's where most voters are.
Approach, right.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was listening to one of the MSNBC shows, and I've forgotten which one now, but they were talking about how the Republican, the Tea Party people are trying to unseat moderate Republicans, even just moderately conservative Republicans, and replace them with hard right ones. And at the same time, over on the left, there are some people who want to challenge Blue Dog Democrats with liberals. I mean, real Democrats, in other words. And the question was asked, well, how is that any different? And, oh, it's completely different. Oh, it was Marcos, whatever his name is, from the Daily Kos, who was saying that. And I'm not so sure it is so very different, really, if you're trying to get ideological purity. You know, I mean,
I agree.
Yeah.
But at this
politics.
Yeah.
No. You know, I don't know. I mean, politics aren't so much about politics as it is. I mean, it's not so much about the people anymore. Do any of them really care about their constituents?
What, the politicians?
Elected politicians, yeah. Do any of them really care? And once they get there, do they really?
Well, some do, but I mean, depending on specifically which office you're talking about, for some of them it's a big job. Like U.S. Senator, there's two in every state. For a relatively small state like, say, Connecticut, sorry, Larry.
That's all right.
It's arguably not as big a job as it would be, say, a senator from Montana, because of the size of the states, the geographic size of the states.
Yeah, but our North Dakota, but the number of people they're representing, you know, for North Dakota is like 500,000, you know.
Hmm. And in Illinois, senator represents, geez, I don't even know what the population of Illinois is these days.
Well, California's the most populous. We have 34 million. So,
yeah. So each senator then is doing, somebody do the math, but that's 17 not, million.
But that's not even true, because they're both elected statewide, so each of them equally represent half of us.
Well, I do know that my U.S. representative in Congress is just about the best there is, so... mm-hmm.
Because I got Feinstein and Boxer here, and I don't know if either of them really, I mean, both of them are Democrats, but both of them are so deep in there as far as where their money comes from, that I don't think they really represent, you know, me as a Democrat.
Hmm.
Does that make sense? I mean,
yeah.
I'll trade you a Lieberman for a Boxer.
Yeah. I don't think that's a deal.
Maybe I was just spoiled because, you know, in Minnesota I had Wellstone.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, and there's, you know, there's no comparison.
Yeah.
So I'll trade you, I'll take five or no, Wellstones for.
I'll see your Lieberman and raise you one.
You know, and then there's a few out there. There's, what's his name in Wisconsin? What's his?
Feingold,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some out there who really, you know, who are out there and are doing work for the people.
Yeah, and there are a lot, and I don't think we give them credit enough when we dwell so much on the bad members of Congress. Because the senior senator from Illinois, Dick Durbin, is an excellent U.S. senator. I voted for him, I'm proud to say. And he, among other things, he is a co-sponsor of the Equality Bill. What the hell is it called? The immigration thing. Uniting American Families Act. And he has often spoken out forcefully in Congress and to the media about liberal issues, liberal perspectives on issues. And Illinois is not a liberal state. I mean, it's a pretty solidly blue state now. But it's certainly not liberal. And he takes positions that I would espouse. And it always surprises me to hear him do that. And my U.S. representative is Jan Schakowsky, who is probably the fiercest advocate in Congress against Blackwater and its many subsidiaries. And the whole problem with mercenaries and so on. And, you know, these are fine people who are doing the people's work in Congress. And there are people like that all over the U.S., maybe not every state, but, you know, there's a lot of them. Maybe we need to do more about singing the praises of people who are doing a good job rather than just always concentrating on those who are doing a bad job, because there's certainly a lot of them.
Bad news makes the news.
It does. And, of course, Illinois has its share of bad people in Congress too. Scotty is saying in the chat room that he thinks I'll have to post this to political. We have discussed political issues on this live stream in the past as well, Scotty. Probably will again in the future. In general, I'm trying to sort of mix up the topics a bit so it's not always the same thing from week to week. The only thing that one is unlikely to hear on a live podcast is talk about U.S. television shows, because I can't see them.
We did talk about sausage parties earlier.
But but Ricky's not here, so we can't talk about it.
Oh, merde. Although I will add about U.S. television shows that Glee starts in New Zealand tonight.
Yay!
So I'll get to see it for myself. I have the whole series queued up in the recorder, so I don't have to worry about missing it. Because tonight's also takeaway night, where we'll have wine, probably a lot of wine, and some sort of food, probably Chinese tonight, I think.
Do they deliver, or do you have to go
no,
and get it?
No, almost nobody delivers anymore. Domino's and Pizza Hut deliver, and I think that's about it.
Yuck, and yuck, two strikes.
Well, we don't eat those.
There's too some salty. Company... There's some company here in Sacramento, and I can't think of the name of it right now, but they go and get it for you. They'll do a lot of different restaurants that have it.
Yeah.
Are you? And they'll go get it and bring it to you.
Well, we used to have a company here. It was called the Restaurant Delivery Company, I think it was. And they would do that. They would go around and just pick up from whoever for you, but they disappeared. Scotty in the chat room asked if we have Eagle Boys here, which was a pizza chain. We used to, and they were taken over by Pizza Hut.
Ugh.
Pizza Hut is a wholly owned subsidiary of a company called Restaurant Brands, which also has KFC and Starbucks. And they also have the master franchise for Taco Bell, although there are no Taco Bells in New Zealand.
Is this just in New Zealand?
Yeah. It's a New Zealand company. Although they did buy the Pizza Hut chain in New South Wales and Australia, I think, but I believe they can't sold it.
I because overall, does PepsiCo not own
no.
KFC and Pizza Hut?
They haven't owned it for years. It's now owned by Yum International, which is a dumb name.
false advertising, I might add.
Yeah, the Eagle Boys chain was really good, and it's a shame that it's gone. But we buy from a New Zealand chain now called Hell Pizza. And anybody who's read my blog will have heard about some of their advertising antics. They've distributed condoms in letterboxes before, and they've run some really racy billboards and things. But they're really, really good. And a burger chain I can recommend in New Zealand is called Burger Fuel, which is in the UK now, and I believe it's expanding to the United States as well. How do we get into food?
Well, I have a question. Let me bring it back around here. We know the Podfather, or no, I don't know, what is he? Big Fatty? What is his?
Grand Fatty.
Grand Fatty of the internets.
Although I decided I'm going to dub him my brother in fat.
Well, he loves Chick-fil-A.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I have eaten there a few times. I have one within about 5 blocks of my house. And I like their food, but what percentage of their money goes to places that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I wouldn't be happy with.
The food might be good, but the politics are bad.
Well, we have a similar situation here. Gloria Jean's Coffee. In the United States and Canada, Gloria Jean's is one operation, but the rest of the world is owned by a company called Gloria Jean's International, which is an Australian company, which is completely and totally tied in with a fundamentalist group called Hillsong. And among other things, they give money to a ministry which is designed to help lesbians leave lesbianism. So, obviously, I will not patronize Gloria Jean's Coffees. So, you know, it's the same sort of thing. I wouldn't go to Chick-fil-A either.
Yeah, but my question then is, well, but then you get other companies like Costco, supposedly a blue, as I guess whatever, however a corporation can be blue. Mm-hmm. But you know what I mean? Are there little companies out there as well that give to our side that the other side goes to unknowingly? And at what point do you change your life? And I mean, I'm trying to be very conscientious about where I go and where I spend my money and how it downhill, you know, the downstream, what happens to that money.
Mm.
But at what point, you know, I refuse to shop at Walmart because of that.
Yeah, and when you go and you make a choice to patronize a place that supports you, some people call it a boycott, because instead of avoiding going there, you make a choice to go there. And the right wing does boycotts all the time. I mean, we know that they're trying to, that they've decided that they're going to remove Pepsi because it is giving money to gay groups, forgetting, of course, that Coke also gives money to gay groups.
Right.
Bright intelligence is usually not one of their attributes. I should say a correction. Scotty in the chat room informs me that the Gloria Jeans International has cut its ties with the ex-lesbian group because of the bad press and some dodgy things they were doing. And the Sydney Morning Herald in particular has been covering the story pretty regularly. But anyway, I tend to try to seek out companies that I know do good, whether it's for GLBT issues or if it's... Scotty informs me, you know, it's Hillsong that's cut the ties. That must mean that Gloria Jeans International is still giving money to the group. They would have one day a year where you would go and then all the proceeds would go to this group to help lesbians leave lesbianism. Anyway, I often try to buy from companies that I know do good things, whether it's for the environment or GLBT issues or whatever it might be. Maybe that's another thing that we need to do more of, to avoid spending money with the bad people and single out the good people to go spend money with.
Well, that's sometimes when we know who they are.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like Whole Foods. What was Whole Foods' big thing recently? That the, was it the owner or the CEO of Whole Foods?
Yeah. I can't remember the details.
What was it that they did? But I can't picture Whole Foods not being, as a whole, most of their employees and otherwise being, you know, to the left.
Well, that was one of the things that was brought up at the time. How could the CEO be so reactionary and right-wing when their customer base is not?
Yeah.
Because they're rich.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. And so, but by you choosing, let's say you choose to go to Whole Foods, I would still to this day assume most of your money and even the people, you know, all the salaries and everything else that you're paying through by doing that, most of that money probably goes to the left. You know, the people who they support.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess it's not as cut and dry. The only cut and dry one I know here in town, and there's ice cream parlor. God, what in the hell are they? I don't even know. Want to remember their name right now. But as a family, each family member maxed out the amount of money it was allowed to contribute to on Prop 8. Or yes, on Prop 8. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a family, I can't think of the name of the Leatherbees. That's what it's. And they have, their ice cream is so good. And I used to frequent there. And I have not, and I never realized how bad they were. And since this whole thing, I have not been back once. I mean, but that was an easy cut and dry one. I don't know if it's always that easy and that cut and dry.
Well, especially in the era of multinational corporations, because a lot of times the big corporations tend to try to steer clear of politics completely, as much as they can anyway. And they might just do little things here and there to try to appease their customers, like, say, advertising gay publications, for example. But they won't necessarily go all out in support of something that might be construed as being political, whereas a smaller company, especially if it's got one major person at the head of it, might. But I mean, if you look at all of the big corporations, Microsoft, Adobe, all the car manufacturers, most of the big food companies, Apple, they all market.
Google,
they all market and give money to the gay and lesbian community. So from our perspective, it's almost doesn't matter what we do. Chances are we're probably going to be indirectly supporting ourselves.
Yeah. and within the, and also within Chick-fil-A and some of them, part of it is whether, I know like McDonald's only does franchises. So you never know if you go into McDonald's, the person who owns that McDonald's and making all the money off of it, what they're actually doing.
That's exactly right.
So you could go to McDonald's and do a lot more harm to yourself, supposedly, than by going to a Chick-fil-A, because if Chick-fil-A is franchised, I mean, Chick-fil-A produces a good product.
Well, ultimately, the consumer is king, and politics is way down the list. You know, I mean,
so I don't know. So I try to flip it back around to gay people and how we spend, you know.
Although, speaking of gay people, I just remembered something. Wisconsin was in the news today because some fundies had gone to the Wisconsin Supreme Court to try to get the civil union law there struck down, saying that it violated the state's ban on marriage and civil unions. And it was without comment, so they don't really know why the Supreme Court did that. But the thing is that the fundies were trying to jump the queue, because you're supposed to start at the lower courts and work your way up, and they didn't want to do that. They went and started at the Supreme Court. Now they're going all the way back down to the bottom, like normal people have to do.
Yeah.
I had a little bit of joy when I read that.
Wonder if that's anything to do with the fact that there's some people who are trying to go to, well, who have been working their way through the courts, trying to explain that the referendum that they put forward the other last year, whenever they did the referendum on gay marriage in our state, they in our state, referendums can only ask one question, and technically, it asked two questions. And so they're trying to get it overturned because it broke the law. But so far, we're likely not going to get a opinion on this until next summer.
Yeah, the wheels of justice grind slowly, don't they?
And the thing is that immediately after it, they went through, there was a lawyer who's actually a professor at one of the universities in our state who immediately went, well, this is illegal. And that was, that would have been in, I think that might have been 2006. I'll have to look. So it's been a couple of years.
Well, isn't law, most of law, regardless, based on precedent?
Well, yeah.
So if something happens and it's never been overturned, created a new precedent, and so who's to say what, you know?
Yeah, some courts are more reluctant to create precedent than others. Very often state courts are a little less resistant to doing it than the Supreme Court is, for instance. But there are a lot of people I know who, you know, we've talked before about having laws being put through sneakily, sort of being as part of something else, like the hate crimes bill as part of a defense bill and stuff like that. And I actually don't have a real big problem with that because the other side does it all the time. So why shouldn't our side get one through every now and again? But the thing is that I'm a bit more uncomfortable with... Did somebody just fall over?
That was Lark.
No, I was just saying that I have a bit more trouble with courts imposing things. It's hard to explain because if somebody does something that's blatantly unconstitutional, obviously you want them to say, no, that's unconstitutional, you can't do that. But I don't know. It's been the source of a lot of our trouble when the courts issue a ruling, particularly on something like marriage.
Yeah. But the thing is, if it gets overturned, if the referendum gets overturned in our state, it doesn't change anything. It's still illegal. It's just...
Yeah.
Some people decided that there needed to be a ruling that said that it's even more legal than it already was.
extra legal.
Yeah, extra illegal.
Yeah. But, who knows?
I'm just looking at dog pictures.
We've been all over the map tonight.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. That's okay. I mean, God
sometimes
knows.
Those are the best because, well, you keep everybody's attention if you stay. What can you really say? I mean, ultimately, we all kind of go and talk about the same stuff, different degrees of the same stuff all the time anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think it's just it's always a good idea to get people talking about stuff. And I mean, most of these live chats have been around an issue of some sort or another, sometimes political, sometimes not. And that's part of what Pride 48 is supposed to be all about, is about talk shows, I should say, and GLBT talk shows. And it's something that doesn't exist in the, I was going to say the podosphere, but it's not that so much, more radio or internet streaming and what have you. There's a lot of stuff for entertainment, there's a lot of stuff for music, but there's not a lot of places where you can go and hear gay folks just talking about stuff going on. So I think there's a definite place for that.
Agreed.
I was just reading...
Crickets.
No, I was just going to say, I was reading what Ness was saying in the chat room, and at first I was, well, what? Just, anyway, doesn't matter. It's about dogs.
Yad.
Yeah, yad.
I need a huge yad.
She was talking, you know, Easton.
There's too many things to follow on here, and if I read the chat room, my mind goes off other ways.
Well, I keep it running just in case somebody says something that I need to respond to, or they ask a question and that kind of thing. But you're right. It does get distracting. And now, who was it who always used to say we should never read the chat room? I can't remember. Maybe we should paraphrase. Well, I think we might as well wrap it up today so I can get back to work.
You know, the sad part is we didn't make anything to make it on Big Fatty.
No.
I don't think we did any.
I think we have a better chance of landing on Annie Vera's show.
Yeah, that's a big chance, isn't it? But in the chat room, because I said about questions, so I better answer it. Brother Sinatus asked if New Zealand celebrates Guy Fawkes Day. And yes, it does. Guy Fawkes was the leader of a conspiracy to blow up the Houses of Parliament. It's sometimes called the Gunpowder Plot. And the slogan is "Remember, remember the 5th of November" and blah 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 blah. And it used to be apparently a really big day, and they used to call them little guys, and guy meaning because his name is Guy Fawkes, and they're basically little voodoo dolls that they would throw on a bonfire because I think he was burned at the stake, I think. And it's a really pretty gruesome thing. But Guy Fawkes was a Catholic, as I remember it, and he was trying to blow up the Houses of Parliament because that was after Henry VIII's day, and they were Protestants, and he didn't like that. So I think that there's a strong anti-Catholic element to this whole Guy Fawkes thing. But in New Zealand, they sell fireworks, and people can go out and buy them. They set them off for several days around Guy Fawkes Day. It's really annoying because it sounds like you're in the middle of an armed rebellion. But they've changed the law in New Zealand. You used to be able to buy it for about a week before Guy Fawkes Day. And I think it was anyone who was 16, maybe 14 or older could buy them. Now they've raised it to 18, and you can only buy it for 3 days before. So I think eventually it's going to be gone completely.
He was hanged and then drawn and quartered.
There you go.
Yay.
Yeah, nice.
He wanted to make sure he was dead, right?
Yeah. Just for good measure.
Make sure he's extra dead. Apparently, you're only supposed to hang them slightly, so then they're not really very dead before you draw and quarter them. James the First, Brother Sinatus says, that's right. See, it all comes back to me. It's not part of my life, so I don't really pay that much attention to it. A lot of people hate Guy Fawkes Day because of the fireworks, and it scares dogs and horses and other animals.
Ours, just like the good old 4th here, which we know you guys don't have the 4th down there.
Yes, we do. It's between the 3rd and the 5th.
No, I thought you guys just blocked that off and you just went from the
skip
third
over
to the
it.
Fifth.
Yeah, we just go right from the 3rd to the 5th. Yes, well. Well, I think we will now wrap it up, and we'll do the usual promo or plug or whatever you want to call it. So, Larkin, why don't we start with you?
I'm going to do something that's going to have to make people work a little bit to get.
Uh-oh.
There's a Canadian TV show called Little Mosque on the Prairie.
And it takes
place in this town called Mercy, and it's this group of Muslims who moved there, and they didn't have any place to have a mosque. So they happened to move into the church, had a place. So they share a church. And the church is kind of they don't really claim what religion, you know, what branch of Christian the church is. But this year they have a new priest on there, our new minister, and his name is Reverend Thorne. And he's quite hot. It's called Little Mosque on the Prairie. And I think this is like its fourth season. But it's a very good TV show. I enjoy it a lot.
Very good. And Steven?
There is a YouTube video that I suggest everybody watch called The Most Terrifying Video You'll Ever See. If you type that in, you'll find it. It's about global warming.
Oh, that's all right. I was afraid it was Two Girls, One Cup.
No. It's an excellent explanation about why we should care, even if global warming isn't happening, why we should still try and prevent it. And it's excellent. So just look up The Most Terrifying Video You've Ever Seen on YouTube. You'll find it. The guy who made it is Wondering Mind 42.
Very good. And Larry Dean?
Tonight I think I'll plug littleozzybattler.net.
You suck up.
Are your shots all cut up?
I don't think there are enough shots.
That'll teach you.
Well, I'm actually going to break with tradition and plug something myself. And it's just something I've started following today on Twitter called Best Church of God. And they have a website and all that sort of happy stuff. But it's a parody of religion, and which is why I like it. And one of today's posts was, I made the Jonas Brothers. You're welcome, God. But I like things like shoplift and kill. Just remember to say you're sorry. If we confess our sins to him, he will cleanse us from all wickedness. John 1:9. So it's their slogan is, we read the Bible so you don't have to. And it just, you know, it's all in good fun. They're not being nasty or anything like that. So I just suggest checking that out. And I will, of course, put a link to that and all the other things in the show notes when I post the recorded version, which probably won't be until tomorrow. I'm tired of this week already.
Hey, you're a day ahead already. So.
I know. My week is winding down. Good for me, hey. Now, I don't know what you next week's... Sorry?
You only have, about 3 hours left until quitting time on Friday?
It is 3:44 p.m. on Friday. And
you only have an hour and a half left.
Yeah, but I can pretty much quit whenever I want, so that's all right. But, although I'll probably be working this evening and tomorrow as well. But anyway. I don't know why Scotty's saying that I'm tipping Archer over the edge. Oh, no, it couldn't have been about God. He would have, about the Best Church of God, he would have liked that one. Anyway, be that as it may. But speaking of Archer, I think we'll do the Archer goodbye this week, because I don't have one.
Let's take it.
Okay. So until next time, say it with me, boys. Bye.
Bye. Archer Radio.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Ammons Podcast at ammonspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's ArthuR, at ammonspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.